Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. It was a new moon on Monday, so it was purely dark for three nights in there, and very little snow on the ground to reflect any starlight or streetlights. Very dark in Lake Wobegon, appropriate for Ash Wednesday coming on. But a little snow fell on Tuesday, and it was good to hear the sound of metal against concrete. Shovelers went down to the Chatterbox Cafe, who belonged to the Cribbage Club, and they sat in the big corner booth there, and they had their scrambled eggs and sausage, and Clint Bunsen was there, and he just ordered a salad. He said, "Are you all right?" "Yeah, I'm fine," he said. "What's going on with you?" "Oh, nothing. I'm okay. Don't worry about me." Well, they weren't going to get the story out of him, but the truth is that he's been gaining weight on Irene's cooking. She got a copy of an old cookbook called The Garden of Gemütlichkeit, which had all the dishes that her old grandma, her old German grandma, Großmutter, Mutti, the grandmother, she used to make all the time, Spätzle, and all those noodle dishes, and all the sausage, and all. Mutti was German. She married into a Norwegian family, her mistake, and she couldn't repair it. She was very funny in German, but that didn't work anymore, and so she got her revenge by cooking them rich dinners, cream sauces and potatoes and dumplings, and she killed off those Norwegians one by one. Their hearts just clamped shut. That was Mutti's revenge. Well, Irene has been cooking dishes out of this in memory of Mutti and giving them to Clint, and he gained about 8 pounds until finally she went off to visit her sister in Indianapolis, and he went on salads, dressing on the side, for a whole week, and he lost 4 pounds, and he was forced, out of self-preservation, to become a vegetarian. She came back home. She made him some creamed spinach. She said, no, completely non-dairy, nothing. So he survived by just eating lettuce, and tomatoes, carrots, and celery. And there he sat in the Chatterbox Cafe, watching everyone eat what he wished he were eating, but he couldn't if he wanted to live. Ash Wednesday was this last week. Father Wilmer up at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility burned the palms from Palm Sunday last year, and he did it outdoors in the backyard, and a big wind came up and it blew the ashes all over him, which the meaning of that he wasn't ready to even think about. So we went over to Lake Wobegon Lutheran, and Pastor Liz was there, and she had plenty of ashes left, and she had done hers inside in the basement with a window fan. So he put Lutheran ashes on Catholics, the Lutheran mark of death. Didn't tell anybody, of course. And Liz promised not to tell. She went out on pastoral calls. She'd gone down to Minneapolis to watch the first woman bishop in the Lutheran Church in Minnesota, Ann Svenningsen, first woman bishop. Big occasion for Pastor Liz. And then she came back home, and she made pastoral calls. Went off and visited the elderly and the sick and the lonely and all of them. She'd given her Ash Wednesday sermon, which is the text from the Bible which tells you to do your good deeds in secret, not in public, don't show off with good deeds, which she does not, going around to people's homes. She's asked to do all sorts of things. She takes the elements of communion, but she's asked to feed cats. She's asked to give hand massages, to fix some scrambled eggs. People want to tell her about their children. She listens. All sorts of things. All that theological training, and none of it is useful for this. You don't go in to see Mrs. Oberg and talk about the argument about free will and how can an omnipotent God create people who then have the freedom to reject him. None of these issues matter. All that matters is that they need something, and maybe they just need somebody to come and fix the toilet float. And so she has volunteers at church. She calls up Clint Bunsen, and he goes out there, and he fixes the toilet float for them. She gets them a cleaning lady. She gets them whatever they need. She comes back to the parsonage, always feeling so sad. You absorb the sorrows of the world going around to visit the lonely and the ill who have nothing to look forward to except the end. She comes back and she weeps, sits in the parsonage and weeps. The way that she cheers herself up is to put on a record. She puts on a record of the St. Olaf Choir, their pop album. And she dances to the St. Olaf Choir, beautiful choir, Pastor Liz, and the music was turned up loud, so she didn't hear the footsteps coming through the kitchen into the living room. And then suddenly he was there. Clint Bunsen walked in. Oh, I'm so sorry. She's so embarrassed because she had started to take off her clothes, and then she started dancing, so she had forgotten to put her jeans on. She was there in her underwear and then her cassock. And she, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. She said, well, he said, getting ready for the talent show, I see. He'd come in to fix her toilet float, and she had forgotten. Well, she went off to change. I'm so sorry, she said. I'm so sorry. I had no idea you were coming over. Well, he's a father. He's used to absorbing the sorrows of the world, too. His oldest daughter, Tiffany, lives down in Atlanta in this old beat-up apartment with big fist holes in the walls from her boyfriend, who has a terrible, terrible temper, and she will not get rid of him. Their son, Chad, is got a job. He's got a job out in California making video games about people walking into hamburger joints and blowing away people, just killing. How many can you kill? It's a terrible, horrible thing, but it's a big seller, and he's getting rich off this. And their youngest, his darling daughter, his little baby daughter, Kira, lives up in Fargo. She works at a French restaurant, Fargo Monet. It's not doing all that well. He's worried about her. She hasn't been paid in 3 weeks, and she's training dogs for the money. She works late at night, gets up early in the morning, and trains big Labradors to walk like ballerinas. And it's for her, for that little girl. He carries a cell phone on him just in case she needs his help for something. He's got her on speed dial, and 20 times a day he's tempted to push one and give her a call, but he knows that if he did, she'd pick it up and she'd say, what do you want? What do you want? I'm okay, all right? Just leave me alone. He was waiting for Pastor Liz to come out of the bedroom fully dressed, and he walked around. He opened her refrigerator, and there was a ham in there, and it looked so good to him. So good. Beautiful, big, cured ham. It was a Virginia ham. Even better. He didn't want to be a thief. On the other hand, it probably was a gift to the church, was it not? Of which he was a member, and he couldn't justify it somehow. He was already a voyeur, didn't want to be a thief on top of it. He walked down to the end of the hall. He called down to the bedroom. He said, are you okay? No, she said. Anything I can do? No. Okay, goodbye then. Goodbye. He was walking out when his cell phone rang. And it was Kira calling from Fargo. hustled out past the refrigerator and out the back door and into the yard. And he picked it up and he opened up the phone. And he said, "How are you?" She said, "I'm okay." "What's going on with you?" he said. "Not much. Not much. You okay? You really okay?" "Could be worse," she said. She's his daughter. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are bug-eyed.